Hey, y'all. As I said, this is a teaser for Ride Home Plus content. If you'd like to have immediate access to all Ride Home Plus bonus content, you know what to do. Go to tech.supercast.tech. You can do it right inside your podcast app. And there's a link in the show notes. Enjoy. Welcome to another Office Hours episode of the Tech Meme Ride Home. I'm Brian McCullough. Today we have a VC legend, Chris Fralick of First Round Capital, who was involved in funding such companies as Ring, Hotel Tonight, Warby Parker, Rec Room, and as you're about to hear, Roblox. But in addition to being a legend, as you'll hear, Chris is just an all-around good dude. Chris, I love you. I like to think of you as a friend. So I always follow what you have to say on Twitter. And I sort of knew that you at First Round were involved in Roblox, but then you shared a great story about you, your personal investment and history with Roblox. So as much as you'd like to share, just tell us that story. Just go.
Sure. Well, thanks, Brian. Good to be here and appreciate all the work you've done. And glad you asked me to be on. So the Roblox story is an interesting one from a couple perspectives. One is my son helped us land this deal, or at least know to be, you know, inform us to be interested that this is a really good game. He wouldn't stop playing once I asked him to check it out as we were considering the company. And so that's been an unfair advantage, I think.
How many years ago?
So it started in 2007 when he was 8 years old.
That, right. Okay.
And you know, the other unique element of it is that we, even after first meeting Dave and taking a first look at it for a few reasons, including it seemed a little expensive for us at the time, we decided to pass, but fortunately did it in a way that didn't alienate Dave Baszucki, the CEO. And because my son kept playing, we kept in touch, and I would go visit him on trips to California and give him feedback, and he would update me on how the business was progressing. And we were fortunate to get another pass, another opportunity to invest, which we took in 2008. And then we, later followed up and led a later investment round and got a meaningful ownership position. And it was fantastic and almost surreal 2 weeks ago today to, in the time of COVID, going public isn't as public of an event as it used to be. Dave Baszucki was almost by himself ringing the bell at the New York Stock Exchange, but it was cool. I was able to drive up from Philadelphia, where I live, and wait in front of the New York Stock Exchange with the little statue of the fearless girl right in front of me, the big Roblox banner in front of the institution of the New York Stock Exchange, and then Dave pulled up in order to go in and be on CNBC and then ring the bell, and I was able to give him a wave and wish him luck and say thanks and just honor the thing that he has built and he and the team. And then, drove back home and watched him ring the bell by the time I got home. But it was just a cool thing to see that and what they've turned into, when for much of their history was very slow growth, extremely, remarkably under the radar. And, for most of the years we were investors, I'd mention it to another investor and I'd say Roblox, they'd say Roadblox. And they wouldn't know what it was. And now the typical response is more like, oh yeah, my daughter plays Roblox.
And or as I've been saying on the show, it's one of the most buzzed about companies in recent times in terms of people that I talk to.
Having no buzz.
Right, exactly. Right. I'd say maybe Stripe people are more FOMO about, but but 2008, that's so long. That's like an entire different environment ago. And so real quick, the question I would have with this is, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong about this, that traditionally US VCs weren't crazy about gaming
as an investment space versus the Chinese, which have thrown all sorts of money into buying every, you know, gaming company they can get their hands on. Number one, do you know why that is? If I'm wrong about that, please correct me. But if I'm right, why do you think that's been?
I think there's certainly more Chinese investors that might be comfortable. I think, and there are a small number, but a growing number, I guess, in the U.S. that have had success and are focused on that category. I think from first round, in our perspective, it was a little bit more of like a traditional gaming companies tend to be organized like studios. You tend to think of games as hit or miss. And again, we've had some investments in that kind of a model and they haven't all worked out. That I think what we recognized was different about Roblox was that it was it wasn't one game. It's multiple games from across, you know, from all kinds of categories, and they're user generated. Like, so that was always right on, very much part of what was different, and, you know, probably harder to pull off in terms of things that need to go right. But once it does, it's less vulnerable to becoming, you know, super cool than out of, you know, out of favor and out of mind. And again, like back then, we, you know, the things that were in vogue were things like Club Penguin was still a thing, and Webkinz was a thing, and people were worried about, you know, we were thinking about what's Lego going to do with Lego Universe.
I mean, heck, that's probably slightly even before Minecraft, right?
Yeah, it was before. In fact, I remember distinctly first hearing about Minecraft and checking it out and downloading the beta and being a little bit freaked out that they looked and felt a lot like Roblox and they kind of weren't on our radar. And I think I even, you know, wrote, you know, kind of a impassioned, you know, email to all the other other board members about, you know, this thing coming out of nowhere that is capturing all the, you know, all the oxygen and the excitement of what we kind of started, right? I mean, it got way bigger than Roblox much quicker. It was acquired, you know, for a couple billion dollars by Microsoft, which was a huge amount of money anytime, but especially back then. And then it's been amazing to watch Roblox climb up and exceed Minecraft in a lot of the usage numbers years ago, and then just, you know, generally and being more, you know, broadly understood and accepted.
Well, amazing story. And, you know, it's also a different era. I think, you know, that was my theory, that either being a hits-based business that's not very scientific, so a lot of people don't want to get into it, but now that you can achieve such scale with it, that maybe that can change for people's thinking. Or it was just everyone remembers Noel Bushnell and the first video game bust, you know? So, yep. But all right, before we get to the traditional questions, you're someone that I have unique questions about, which is, if anyone's ever been to the first round offices in New York, you go in and in the lobby, there's sort of a tech museum waiting for you, unless you've changed it in recent years. And you also, I've discovered over the years, have a bit of a tech museum in your house. So tell me about this. Is this just pack rat? Is this just, I'm a collector? Do you have any sort of thesis for collecting tech gadgetry and things like that?
Yeah, I've collected and have gadgets from decades ago when I used to work and sell computers. And Brett Burson, who's our partner in San Francisco, when we were rebuilding the San Francisco office, he asked me, "What can I pick out some items that might be cool to have around the office?" And he sort of went on a hunting expedition on eBay and picked up a lot of cool things. And I had an extra, I think, an original Apple portable that I gave them. And it's always remarkable in San Francisco office. We did the same thing in New York. And it's a thing I love. I've now joined the Computer History Museum. I'm on the board there and know a lot of the people who are into collecting. And, you know, it's cool to have the objects. It's even more cool, I think, to have the stories and know about the people that are behind them. But I actually have a couple things that I'm up to show you.
Awesome. I was hoping. I didn't ask, but I was hoping. Yes.
So I was watching your Gary Tan Office Hours, And it was a really cool conversation about Star Trek versus Star Wars, right?
Right, right. We'll get to the rapid fire eventually. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, he gave this awesome answer about why it's, you know, hands down Star Trek in his mind. But I got this a little while ago, which is pretty rare thing. I don't know if you could see it. So it's a cassette version of Star Wars.
The game, I'm assuming.
For your Apple II, it loads. It's less than 16K. But on the flip side is Star Wars. So that's a cool, rare item and an interesting medium you don't always see. Other Apple related, but not Apple things. Do you know what this is? I'll ask you first. Do you have any idea?
Okay. It's obviously a keypad input device, but for what? I couldn't tell you.
When Woz left Apple, he started a remote control company called Core. It's basically a universal remote before that was even a concept. It was designed by Frog Design and failed, rumor would say, in part because Steve Jobs got mad at the whole idea in the company. But there aren't many of them. I've never seen one live before someone pointed it to me on eBay. And I'll show you one other little thing that I don't think I've shown anywhere before. You know what that is?
I'm guessing it's a motherboard, or maybe it's old enough that that's not a motherboard. That's maybe just a chip.
Well, it's kind of close. It's kind of both. It's the company that Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak had, not a company. It's their business before Apple. It's
right.
Blue Box. It's the chipset that plugged into a little keypad and a
to do phone freaking.
For phone freaking, blue boxing, calling, making free long distance calls while you hack the phone system. They famously called the Vatican and pretended to be Henry Kissinger and almost got the Pope on the phone. They were this close, I'm told.
Do you have an Apple One?
I don't. I have a replica. I have a replica of an Apple One.
I'm assuming you have an Apple Two.
I do.
Yes.
I have an Apple Two signed by Woz and refused to be signed by Jobs.
What would you say the most valuable, and maybe that's a tough one because by dollar figure, I don't know if that matters, but maybe what do you think is like the most historically valuable thing that you get?
The most unique thing might be that blue box I just showed you. I'm told there were only, you know, there's a small number of them made and maybe as little as 30 or 40. And I don't know how many are still in existence, but, you know, I like some of the things that I have that are kind of one of a kind. There's a startup or a company called Mischief in Brooklyn near you. Do you know those guys?
No.
They do almost performance art with drops of unique products. And once they created a laptop with the 7 most deadly viruses ever created by man and kind of sealed it off in a Toshiba laptop. And I have a replica of that signed by all the people that work at Mischief. So that's one you're careful not to plug that one in.
I was going to say, I feel like I've heard about that as a stunt, but
they did it. Yeah. They did it as a stunt.
All right. Let's try to squeeze in some of these, typical questions if we can. Who's the best boss you ever had?
That's pretty easy for me. Cause I've been lucky to work with Josh Koppelman for a long time. For I've known him for almost 25 years and worked with him since 1999. So 22 years and in a startup where I was, you know, working for him as a head of business development, half.com. And then the last 15 years, working for him and partnering with him at First Round and, you know, watching and helping him build this crazy idea of a seed sage venture firm, which there really were a small number of folks doing it professionally back in 2005 or even four when he and Howard got it going, when I joined and Rob Hayes joined in 06. If I'm getting the years right, there were still like one handful or two at the most of firms that were professionally and full-time focused on seed stage investing, and now there's hundreds or thousands. It's a whole different landscape. But Josh's, you know, is just lives up to his great reputation, and in terms of, you know, seeing the future and building it and bringing great teams along with him to help do it.
I feel like we should reference the fact that there's a great internet history podcast interview with Chris that you can look up that will tell you the whole half.com story and more of Chris's entire career, which we won't get into as much here, but seek it out. Is there a quality that the most successful people you've worked with over the years have had in common?
I would probably give two or a variation on one. I think the worst quality that you avoid is any kind of hypocrisy, or if you can't trust or believe what someone says. And so integrity and doing what you say you're going to do, like those are super core values to me. I think I used to think of it just in terms of sales people skills and traits you'd want to see, but I think it's more broad. Is probably empathy, I would say, is the character or the trait that is super important to be able to have a sense of what, you know, of being in the other person's shoes, working, you know, once you're in that headspace to be able to work on a common solution together. And, you know, the best salespeople, business development people, you know, even leaders, I think generally tend to have that quality, and you don't hear it talked about that often.
Is there something that you think you're better at than anyone else in the world?
I don't think so. I don't know if there's anything. Maybe
no.
If
you, no, but by the way, no is a fair answer to that question.
Yeah. I can't name one thing, but I think I have a unique combination of things. So, you know, I think like one example is I come out of a business background in college, and I was selling computers, but I would tend to know more about how they worked than other people who were just selling computers. Like they could have been selling typewriters or paper or, you know, anything else. I truly always loved the thing that I did and knew about it. And, you know, so when I, you know, eventually started getting into startups, I was raising capital and I was doing deals and I was having successes and I was having failures. Like I kind of lived part of the startup life, not being an actual founder and entrepreneur myself. I've joined three different companies when I was the fifth employee, more or less. And so that, you know, I have a good understanding of what that's like. And I think that's translated into how I've been able to work with, you know, and partner with the 75 companies that I led when I was actively investing over the course of my first round career. And again, one thing that I don't know if it's a record or it's unique, but, you know, of an investor has to see a company or an opportunity, has to decide to invest, and then has to win the deal, right? So that's sort of the third element of it. And in my history of 75 investments, I only lost one. It was only one investment, you know, one company that we wanted to invest in that I was point on, where we put in a term sheet and wanted to make an offer and they didn't accept it. So I think I was pretty good at selling first round and myself and getting into virtually every deal that we wanted to get into, which, you know, a lot of investors get through the first two parts and then there's six term sheets on a table and five losers and one winner.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. It's warm out today, so I'm wearing one of the polos I got from Mack Weldon when I stocked up for the spring. I could wear this to my son's soccer practice, but I'm also wearing it to an investor meetup in the city tonight. That's because Mack Weldon apparel looks like regular clothes, but feels like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. This polo I'm wearing is an upgrade on the classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. It feels great. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code RIDE. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code RIDE. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? How about your customer base? How about your business on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow, whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Was just checking in on our Shopify store this morning, running flawlessly as it's done for nearly a decade now. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ride, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ride now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ride.
If you could pick one, what would you say is the number one way that you see founders screw up their startups?
The simplest is running out of money. That's kind of an obvious one, I guess.
Well, that's forced upon you, maybe. Yeah, well, sometimes.
Well, yeah, it's less obvious. I think what's more subtle about that is companies tend to spend as much money as they raise in 24 months, more or less, no matter how much they raise, and that's controllable. And that's definitely problematic. I would also say generally it ends up being more self-inflicted wounds that kill them than any direct competitor. In fact, companies often spend too much time just focused on everything that's happening out in the marketplace and not enough on what they can control and what they're doing inside their own walls.
These three they seem like they're similar, but there's a subtle difference in these next three. So the first one would be, what do you think is the most overrated or played out narrative in tech right now? And narrative more than, technology or trend or something, specifically narrative.
I don't know if this qualifies or anything. I think SPACs are interesting, but there's too much too fast. You just know there's going to be some negative outcomes and bad behaviors incentivized, even though just the concept of having more public companies is a good thing. And I think we need to find a good medium between, we have half the number of public companies that we did decades ago to having hundreds of SPACs roll out, every few weeks or months, hunting for their targets. I think there should be some happy medium. So That's one thought on the narrative there.
Yeah, SPACs generally. So the number two, the biggest story in tech right now, and by story, I mean the thing that a guy like me would write a book about 20 years from now.
It might be a theme. Just I would think of a company that maybe up until very recently was under the radar. It is a company called Rec Room. Have you been tracking them at all?
No, not really. I know of them, but not really tracking them that much.
So yesterday, the Wall Street Journal ran a story with them that they raised at over $1 billion valuation, and they're kind of a Roblox in some ways, but different. But they started off in VR, and then they kind of expanded into other formats. But it's also very much user generated content. Users make it all. Avatars, interaction real time. I think it's just part of, like, with Roblox, with Rec Room, just the whole theme of user generated content, avatars, metaverse, in VR, in your tablet, on your PC, really becoming a thing. Like, I think these aren't going to be, you know, just a few of the companies. I think it's an absolute theme, and the in 20 years, Ready Player One might be very much what we're living in.
Right.
We listen to, like, Elon Musk and just talking about, like, how fast technology changes. It's actually probably harder to make an argument that that's not where we are in 20 years than it is to say that's where we're going to be.
Well, and, you know, listeners to the show have been listening along as I've been trying to get deeper into AR and VR. So, like, the whole Matthew Ball theory that the metaverse is finally upon us. Yeah. If it's really here, then yes, that's the book that someone will write 20 years from now.
He said it very eloquently, in his piece he wrote probably 6 months ago on the topic. And, but clearly there's a movement there, and it's possible that's the one. It's also just, it's interesting that AR, VR was an area I was really, really focused on several years ago. And for a while thought I might have put too much energy into that, and it wasn't really paying off, but always felt good about Rec Room was, one investment that came out of that, and could just see them accelerating and following and learning faster and iterating faster than we watched Roblox do. And so that, and then now you're even seeing, like, a comeback in VR. Like, I think you had the hype cycle and the trough of disillusionment, and we're kind of coming back. And, just on a ski trip with some friends, and I brought a little Oculus Quest with me, and everybody was just blown away. They'd never been in VR, and everybody, loved it. And, again, I think it's going to, it and the metaverse and avatars and all that will absolutely be a thing that we're all dealing with going forward.
Third of the three then is the most underrated or underreported story or theme in tech right now. The thing that even someone like me, that tries to pay attention every day, wouldn't have on my radar.
You might've stumped me with that, 'cause I think everything is so completely reported
at the surface. Yeah.
Do you have any, maybe you could.
Well, like, what's something that needs more, that people are sleeping on, that while it's people are undervaluing that this could be the next big thing.
So maybe it's more of a meta theme of, like, is technology good or bad? Or if you watch Social Dilemma or things of that nature, Tristan and others, a lot of the Facebook backlash is really interesting. And, for my whole career, I probably would have said that I was, a tech utopian, right? Like Wired magazine, I really ate it and drank it and believed it was, for the vast majority, all for good. And I think in the reality lately, there's a lot of bad, right? I don't know what the breakdown is, but it's not 90-10. It might be more 60-40 good to bad, or I don't know what the right balance is. But I guess my point is, maybe it's underrated and really important that we figure out how to make technology work for good and for our better instincts and making us smarter and better. And it isn't right now. And again, like if you would have asked me, if we would have done this interview on a VHS camcorder 25 years ago, and you would have told me that everyone is going to have a supercomputer in their pocket with all the world's information available for free, I probably would have thought we would have been smarter or better or done more with it than what we turn out to have done to ourselves and what we really actually spend time doing with it. So I think there might be it's underreported and needed that we figure out how to point ourselves in positive directions with all this cool technology we have.
Speaking of the supercomputer in your pocket, is there an app that's on your lock screen that maybe I wouldn't have, something that you can't live with, some app that you would want to proselytize and turn people on?
Let me see. Can I give you a quick hit? A couple?
Sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. I love Tech Meme. I also love Nuzzle. So it's a social version of that. So what are my folks I follow reading and
or retweeting? Yeah.
Retweeting. So I find that as an interesting like news source. Notion, it's one of our companies, but I kind of live on it. I keep everything in there. And love that on the home screen. And then I love music, and there's a high-end kind of, I think it's a small niche, but if you're really into high quality digital music and knowing everything about the artist you love, there's an app and a service called Roon, R-O-O-N, that I bet you haven't heard of.
No.
People have. And it basically just organizes all your music you have in your network, connects to the high-end services like Tidal is one of them, and provides an overlay of incredible information that lets you dive ridiculously deep into the rabbit holes of every artist, every genre, every album, and everything about them that you ever wanted. So that's, you can get a free trial for 14 days if you want to try it out.
Tax season is when I rebalance my main retirement portfolio, my dividend growth stock portfolio. I've been using Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, to do that just this very week. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They are the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Well, with Yahoo Finance, securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, their real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. yahoofinance.com, that's yahoofinance.com.
We'll come back to music because I want to end with that, but let me squeeze one more in here, which is what is your tool of choice for Zen, be it exercise, meditation, drugs, legal or otherwise? Like if you need to go to your happy place or relax or something, what is it?
Yeah, it's probably a workout or a Peloton or a run. It's something physical like that. And you know, and if it's a run, I'm listening to some music, you know, on my headphones. So that's what would get me there.
Is there, well, which one should I do? I'll do what's the last book you read?
I can tell you because I keep a list in my Notion. Hold on, let me look at it. I'm gonna probably go to the last good one.
Yeah, probably the wise choice.
The 26 Words That Created the Internet.
By
Jeff Kossoff is his name. Incredibly well done. It deserves an entire book. It's an autobiography of a law. It's not even a law. It's a series of words and part of a section and part of a big law that he make. Again, this should be right up your alley.
Yeah, absolutely.
You should do an episode with him of what was intended, what was written, how it played out, how it changed. And once you read that, you realize that everybody who's got an opinion on what should happen to it now has not done enough homework. Like there will be, no matter what you do to it now, there would be so many unintended consequences, and everybody's got an agenda. You know, like Facebook just came out today with what their proposal would be to amend it and fix it. And I'm sure it benefits them. And, you know, we had past presidents who wanted to just delete the whole thing completely and see what happens, you know, for their reasons. And it's so important and very subtle. And you want to be really careful when you mess with it. So that I'd recommend that to everybody.
Okay, rapid fire. And I'll end with the music rapid fire so we can talk about that. But Star Trek versus Star Wars for you.
I would say more Star Trek because I just grew up on it. I can't get as philosophical as Gary on the Prime Directive or anything, yeah. But you know, just William Shatner and the guys in the red shirts, and that was my thing as a kid growing up.
Coke versus Pepsi.
Coke. Even occasionally the coffee Coke. It's a new thing in a can. It's twice as bad for you, but it's,
you know, really what? I've never asked anyone this. Have you ever switched? Cause I used to be a Coke person. And in the last couple of years, I've totally switched to Pepsi.
No.
You ever go back and forth? No. Yeah. I feel like most people pick one and stick with it. Yeah. iOS versus Android.
Easy. iOS all the time. I get lost in Android. I always have a backup phone just in case. And I can never figure it out. I'm very, very all in on Apple.
Mac versus PC.
All Mac. But I have both. I game on a PC and VR on a PC, but I am a Mac person.
Tupac versus Biggie?
You know what? I would probably have to say Biggie, but I'm not qualified enough to give you a big reason behind either, but I would have
all
to.
All right. Well, this is maybe you're more qualified for it. And I'll give you the trifecta, which is Elvis versus Beatles versus Stones.
I would go with the Stones, and I can say that with authority in the sense of during pandemic, I bought the box vinyl sets of both the Beatles and the Stones, and went through every album, and they're both amazing. But the Stones is just so completely epic, and was of my time, or at least for part of it, and so I would, you know. Elvis influenced them all, but I would pick the Stones, and they're still kicking, which is just like the amazing part. Can't believe it.
My answer to that is Stones. And the reason why this is a generational thing, like, you know, I'm of that age of, you know, the Beatles were just always on in my house when I was a kid. So it was in the air. Beatles weren't that. And I heard the early 60s Stone stuff, but when I got to college and realized and started to hear the Stone stuff from the 70s,
yeah,
and it blew my hair back, and like, so that's why Stones is my answer for that, because I just hadn't been exposed to it, and it's amazing.
It holds up so well.
Yeah. So speaking of music, do you do the Clubhouse thing weekly?
Yeah. So I've enjoyed playing around with Clubhouse, and a group of us do a weekly show or room, as they call it, called Record House. It's vinyl music culture, the music that moves you, and we pick a topic every week and kind of dive deep on it with ourselves, as you know, our four or five co-hosts, plus we sometimes have guests, and we're playing music and giving samples, and we have an ongoing playlist on Spotify called the Record House Ongoing Playlist, if you want to find it. And you'll right there you would find hundreds and hundreds of songs that we've picked, our audience has picked, over the last almost 30 shows that we've done. And it's just been a fun thing, and how we, you know, none of us have ever met in person. We all met through
Twitter
and Clubhouse. I'm sorry, one person I knew in person, but otherwise it's all virtual, and we're kind of self-organizing and figure out how we come up with topics and, you know, who's leading each week and coming up with calendars. It's really fun. Makes me appreciate what you do with podcasts. Well,
actually, and I have to say, is it Ashwin or
Ashwin?
Yeah. Ashwin actually was the guy that helped me figure out how to get audio into and out of Clubhouse. So
yeah, so we didn't know how to do that at first. Like the joke was I was DJ Frey or something they called me, but I was literally holding up my iPhone to my speakers.
Yeah,
and then Ashwin and figured it out from London, and he now has a little system that plugs it, tunes it right in, and we sound almost professional.
Yeah, now, no, you sound good.
But it's fun, and I hope you'll join us Thursday at 6:30 p.m.
Yeah. By the way, like I was there last week, but I think you were doing 73 or 74, and it's like that's enough before my time that I can't. I feel like
that was right in my wheelhouse. So I loved that topic.
Let me know if you ever do something like 1991.
All right.
I have a lot to say about that. But hey, Chris, you're the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for all you do for the internet and tech meme and everything.